Today's broadcast was originally recorded on September 9th, 2025.
There is much to understand about Smartmatic, which owns Dominion Voting Systems.
It was created to produce altered voting results in Venezuela.
The machine ran an algorithm that shaved votes from Trump and awarded them to Biden.
What is apparently a broadly coordinated effort to actually bring down this president.
Yeah, sure. It's 2025 and Fox News is still in trouble.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
For 2020.
I got the feeling there's something right.
Well, it should be.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
We'll see.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-round swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. Coming up later this hour, if time allows, Desi Doyen. Hi, Des.
Hi, time better allows.
We'll see. We'll see. Desi Doyen will have our latest Green News Report as electricity demands continue to spike, even as electricity prices continue to spike along with it, of course, even as the Trump administration continues to shut down renewable electricity generation.
Like brilliant.
Massive wind farms, many of which were almost ready to go online. So, yeah, brilliant. Also, on Tuesday afternoon, the state legislature in Missouri moved to rig their U.S. House districts in advance of next year's 2026 midterms by breaking up one of the state's few remaining Democratic-leaning congressional districts. But that, by the way, is not all that Missouri Republicans did today to undermine democracy and their own voters. We will get to that a little bit later. But first today, we have been, yes, closely following, going on 5 years now, the legal defamation claims made against right-wing media outlets like Fox News and Newsmax and One American News by voting machine companies like Dominion and Smartmatic for claims forwarded by those media outlets. You heard some of them at the top of the show there, that the two companies somehow used their voting systems to steal the 2020 election from Donald Trump on behalf of Joe Biden. You may have heard us talk about that once or twice over the past 5 years. The right-wing media outlets, when challenged by the voting companies, have been forced to settle in case after case after case, given the lack of any evidence at all, frankly, to support the claims that the companies rigged their machines in 2020. And given that the pro-Trump media outlets offered an enormous amount of airtime to the false, unproven claims, which the voting system companies say have severely harmed their businesses, and given the fact that discovery in the defamation cases has revealed that high-profile on-air personalities and company executives knew that the claims being forwarded over their airwaves were false, that the election wasn't stolen from Donald Trump, by the voting machine companies, or by anybody else. Yet, they ran with the claims anyway to pump up their ratings, taking advantage of apparently easily duped MAGA viewers. Most famously, up until now, Fox News, just before Dominion Voting Systems' case against it was about to begin trial, settled at the last minute for an enormous $787.5 million, more than $750 million, after airing repeatedly false claims that Dominion used its machines to rig the election for Biden in 2020. They preferred that huge payout, apparently, versus further embarrassment for the company in a trial that would feature the likes of Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Jeanine Pirro, Lou Dobbs, Jesse Waters, and others being forced to take the stand at trial. Last month, the even farther right media outlet known as Newsmax settled with Dominion for $67 million to make a similar defamation case against their company go away after the judge in that case found that, yes, Newsmax had, in fact, defamed Dominion. The only thing left to figure out was for a jury to decide how much it would cost them. So they settled. That followed on an earlier settlement by Newsmax with the Smartmatic voting machine company for some $40 million. That was also a settlement. There was also a settlement, I should say, between Smartmatic and One America News, the even farther right-wing outlet, though the terms of that settlement were not made public, and Dominion has a still pending case against OAN as well. In other words, it has not gone well for the right-wing, self-described news outlets, which repeatedly and falsely cited the two voting machine companies as having stolen the election for Joe Biden. None of that, of course, is a surprise, given the lack of evidence to support the media outlets' evidence-free claims. But in addition to Dominion's case against OAN, Smartmatic has its own still-pending case against the deepest-pocketed right-wing outlet of them all, that would be Fox News. Now, while we were off over the Labor Day holiday, Media Matters for America senior fellow Matt Gaertz was hard at work plowing through discovery documents in that still ongoing lawsuit filed by Smartmatic against Fox, which the voting vendor charges with the now familiar claim of defamation over false on-air reports about the company, whose only U.S. contract, by the way, during the 2020 election was out here in Los Angeles County. Surely, even Fox News did not believe that Los Angeles was stolen from Donald Trump, did they? More importantly, whatever the false claims were, and this is important in defamation suits against media outlets, did Fox know that their reports about Smartmatic were false at the time that they aired them anyway? As Gaertz wrote at MSNBC.com last month, hundreds of pages of damning files in Smartmatic's $2.7 billion lawsuit against Fox became newly available to the public in late August after the court removed substantial redactions to the documents. The unveiling came 2 years after the right-wing network paid a record $787.5 million to settle a similar lawsuit with Dominion. The Smartmatic filings, like those from Dominion's suit, Gaertz reports, are stuffed with internal Fox text messages, emails, and other communications that paint a vivid picture of operations within the network in late 2020. And, he notes, in the years since, the right-wing propaganda network has reshaped the incentives for its staff in ways that would make another such disinformation campaign more likely and more potent in the future. Joining us now is our old friend Matt Gaertz, senior fellow at Media Matters, where he's been hard at work since 2007, largely focused on the relationship between the right-wing media and Donald Trump's Republican Party, news coverage of politics and elections, and media ethics. Oh, Matt Gaertz, it has been a while, but welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Well, thank you so much for having me back.
I'm shorter than hoped on time today, and I want to get into some questions on what has happened over the past 24 hours regarding Fox News and the Rupert Murdoch family fortune, and I guess a death watch for the 94-year-old media mogul at this point, as well as some disturbing developments at CBS News this week. But let's begin with the revelations from this still ongoing suit between Fox and Smartmatic. We learned quite a bit from the discovery documents released just before the Dominion Fox settlement 2 years ago that Fox on-air personalities and executives knew the claims about a stolen election were false. Did we learn? What did we learn? Did we learn anything additional along those lines, those specific lines in the Smartmatic Fox discovery documents? And I guess if so, who turned out to be the sleaziest and most dishonest of them all, Matt?
Well, I think we certainly filled in some gaps, some questions that I had after the Dominion suit that I think have been answered to one extent or another in the Smartmatic one. But, you know, I think more broadly, what the suit shows, as the Dominion one did before it, is they knew. Fox News's top executives and hosts were well aware that Donald Trump had lost the election, that there had not been massive voter fraud, as he claimed, that had kept him from being reelected. And they went out and said the opposite to their viewers night after night, segment after segment, for weeks. They did it because they were worried about losing portions of their market share to outlets like Newsmax and OAN that were perceived as more willing to push those lies. And, you know, they have, in the days since then, demonstrated that they are absolutely willing to do it again if the Republican nominee in 2028 tries the same con that Donald Trump did in 2020.
And it was interesting looking at some of these exchanges. They seem to be less, you know, talking amongst themselves to try to figure out what happened and where the fraud happened and how the rig happened. Rather, their conversations were, you know, made clear that they knew it was nonsense. But the question was, well, should we air it or not? You've got, you quote, for example, Jesse Waters, who is so sleazy, talking to Greg Gutfeld, who is equally sleazy, saying, quote, think about how incredible our ratings would be if Fox went all in on Stop the Steal. So it wasn't a question, you know, that you know, newsmen might have between each other. This was like, hey, why don't we just go with this thing no matter what? Look how great the ratings would be.
And since then, Jesse Waters and Greg Gutfeld have both been promoted. They each got their own primetime shows in the Fox News lineup in the years after doing that. There's another great vignette in the documents where Sean Hannity is texting his associates a few days after Election Day. And he's been seeing, you know, Rudy Giuliani do his crazy act about how there's been voter fraud, and he doesn't buy it at all. He says, he texts to his associates, he is going nuts. We canceled the guy. He's insane. The next day he tells his producers, Giuliani is acting like an insane person. I'm not Red Pill 78. So he's at that time claiming Rudy Giuliani cannot be trusted at all when he talks about the election, that everything that he's saying about it being rigged is total nonsense, and he is not going to have Rudy Giuliani on the air. And then a week later, he hosts Rudy Giuliani to talk about what? Election fraud claims.
There was one example you cite between Sean Hannity, again, and Laura Ingraham, who were concerned and sort of warning about a Fox News reporter who had reported accurate information about these allegations. They were worried that the accurate information over their airwaves was costing them viewers and ratings.
And they were almost certainly right. That's that's one of the issues that we have here. What they understand is that if they give their audience accurate information, that audience will revolt. The audience wants to be told that Donald Trump is right and virtuous, and that you know, his enemies are evil, and that the election has been stolen from him. And so they are coming around over the course of these text messages and emails and what have you to just straight up lying to their viewers, saying things that they know are not true in order to keep their viewers from going to their competitors. And the end result of that, of course, is defamation lawsuits that result in hefty payouts.
In case after case after case. I mean, they have gotten nowhere. None of these media outlets have gotten anywhere. They have all so far settled. Now, I want to go to some of the bigger picture you talk about here and what this means moving forward. But before we get out of, you know, naming names here, Brett Baer, who has, you know, long anchored what Fox describes as its hard news program, Special Report with Brett Baer. He's for some reason regarded as a straight news guy by many, and not just at Fox, but elsewhere, for reasons, frankly, that I really don't understand. But the insider emails and text messages also reveal that Brett Baer, the straight news guy, was worried about falling ratings for not falsely reporting on election fraud claims.
Yeah, I mean, he has the same. He's seeing the same things that the Fox opinion side folks are, and he's getting worried about them as well. And in fact, something that's not in the Smartmatic filings, but you do get some of in the Dominion filings, and then from some reporting from the New York Times, is that his response to that was to say, we should stop calling elections when we think it might freak out our viewers. He wanted to reverse the Arizona call that Fox made, which had really riled up Trump's team and the viewers of Fox News, specifically because of that criticism. And I think going forward, if he has his way, and I think he clearly has had his way, Fox's opinion, Fox's election desk is just not independent in any real way. It's going to be, you know, calls that the top executives are willing to let the number crunchers make, and they'll just withhold those if they think that it's bad for their brand.
Interesting, coming on the heels of the story of late of Trump firing the Bureau of Labor Statistics head because he didn't like the numbers. And the new guy coming in saying, well, you know what, maybe we don't need to report monthly job numbers. I guess if you just do away with the data that you don't like, well, you can get away with anything, apparently. Now, Matt Gaetz, you identify sort of a moment when Fox seemed after the 2020 election to actually pivot from at least some skepticism that the 2020 election was stolen from Trump to a sort of full court, you know, Team Trump full court press to promote the lies on air, where they collectively decided, yeah, we're going with Stop the Steal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What ends up happening, if you think back to the timeline here, you know, Donald Trump had spent months telegraphing that he was not going to accept the results of the election in 2020 if he lost it. He said that he was definitely going to win and that the only thing that could stop him would be mail-in ballot fraud on a massive scale that he claimed Democrats were trying to do. Mm-hmm. You know, the night of the election, while everyone else was saying, wow, the Electoral College math looks pretty bad for Donald Trump right now, Donald Trump was declaring victory and saying that the election had been rigged. And that just puts everyone kind of to the test within the right-wing sphere. You know, what happens, because Donald Trump lies so much, mm-hmm. he forces his supporters to make their peace with either letting the lie go past and ignoring it or running with it. There are very few who are willing to say, you know what, this thing is not happening. And there was a period in the first few days after Election Day where the hosts recognized that Donald Trump had lost, and they were willing to at least not give a huge amount of support to these election theft ideas. But then what they saw was an audience revolt. They saw Newsmax gaining ground on them. And from the executives on down to the hosts, there was a noticeable pivot toward finding some sort of conspiracy-minded election fraud content that they could talk about. And they stuck with that for weeks. We did a study after, I think, 2 weeks after Election Day, and we found then that several hundred, I think something like 800 instances of Fox casting doubt on the election had occurred over that period, and it continued for weeks after that.
And then you write that Fox has solidified an incentive structure in which staffers are rewarded for propping up Trump and everything that he does, including providing incentives for its staff in ways that would make another disinformation campaign more likely and more potent in the future. How so? Explain how that works. How have things changed since 2020 to actually, and despite all the money it's cost them over at Fox, how have things changed to make such a campaign more likely and more potent in the future rather than less so?
They meted out rewards and they meted out punishments after all of this happened. Looking through these documents, years after the fact at this point, what seemed clear to me was right now, most of the people who tried to push back against the conspiracy theories have been pushed out. The decision desk leaders, Chris Steyerwalt and Bill Salmon, were fired shortly after shortly after Inauguration Day. Reporters like Kristen Fisher and Leland Vittert, who pushed back against the lies, left for other jobs. Anchor Neil Cavuto recently retired. The people who were not willing to say things that they knew weren't true in order to defend Donald Trump's election subversion effort aren't there anymore. On the other hand, most of the people who you see in the documents getting on board with the election lies, people like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham, are still there. People like Greg Gutfeld and Jesse Waters, as we've said, have been promoted. And then, there are the people like Jeanine Pirro, who was then a Fox News host and now is no longer there, but it's because Trump appointed her U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia.
Right.
Pete Hegseth shows up in the documents being asked by Jesse Waters if he got, quote, the memo about not saying fraud. And he's not a Fox and Friends weekend host anymore. He's Secretary of Defense, now calling himself Secretary of War. The people who were willing to lie are either still at Fox or they've been brought into the Trump administration in positions that would give them some influence if a Republican attempted to overturn an election in the future.
Now, there are – it's amazing. They all fail up at Fox News, it seems. There are some additional factors I want to note in the Smartmatic suit versus the Dominion suits and so forth, in that the company Smartmatic, their executives have in fact been alleged to have paid off officials in other countries like the Philippines, for example, to contract for their voting systems, which Fox seems to be hoping to focus on in this particular case as evidence that, well, Smartmatic is no good from top to bottom. Do you have any sense of whether this case, like the Dominion Fox case and the others, will also end in a pretrial settlement? Or do you have a sense that this one actually could go forward, to a trial? The fact is, even if Smartmatic does have a shady background, and they do, that would not keep all of this embarrassing Fox stuff from coming to light at a trial where presumably some of its biggest stars that we've mentioned here would be called to publicly testify, no?
I wouldn't presume to try to guess how this is going to play out. I was actually in the Wilmington, Delaware courtroom for the first day of the Dominion trial against Fox News a couple of years ago. I was there for they did jury selection, and then there was a long break. And during the break, I guess they hashed out the final terms for the settlement and got it done in a way that precluded the network's top stars from needing to appear at a trial and try to explain away everything that had happened. We could be heading for a similar situation with Smartmatic. We could be heading for a situation where there's an earlier settlement that goes through, as happened with some of the Newsmax and OAN lawsuits. We could see a real trial. I think clearly Fox doesn't really want that to happen.
I suspect they don't. I think the trial is now set to start. If it actually does start, it would be in early 2026. Hopefully you'll be sitting in the courtroom when that one gets settled, Matt. And I suspect you'll be following whatever happens either way. I do want to try to sneak in a couple of related-ish points from over the past 24 hours. First, as reported on Monday, Matt Gaetz, Rupert Murdoch's family has now reached a deal on control among the family of the 94-year-old mogul's media empire after his death, ensuring no change in the direction at Fox News, creating a trust, establishing control of the Fox Corporation for Lachlan Murdoch, who is Rupert's chosen heir to the he's been running Fox News in recent years, along with his younger sisters. Lachlan's three older siblings, Prudence, Elizabeth, and James Murdoch, in this deal, give up any claims to control of Fox, the Fox Corporation, Fox News, in this deal, in exchange for stock valued at something like $3.3 billion, according to the New York Times, which first reported on this on Monday. So I can't tell, but as far as I understand this, nothing changes at Fox News when Rupert finally croaks, as some thought, oh, well, maybe James Murdoch, who is not quite the right winger that Lachlan is, that something might change at Fox News. This makes it look like everything's going to continue Fox Newsing for years to come, even after Rupert is no longer with us.
I think that's right. Yeah, Lachlan's reputation is, if anything, more ideological than Rupert Murdoch. I guess the way you'd look at it is, Rupert Murdoch is a businessman who has right-wing views, and Lachlan is a right-winger who also does some business. right. It's that sort of difference. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think it mainly means Fox News will continue being the malignant force in American politics it has been for decades now. Lachlan certainly shows up in these Smartmatic filings as someone who is aware that Donald Trump has not really won the election, but is nonetheless helping the network move toward a position where they help Donald Trump out by suggesting that the election had been rigged. He plays a particular role in helping Judge Jeanine back on the air. She was originally taken off after the election because Fox's executives thought that she would not be responsible because she's a conspiracy theorist. He was eager to get her back on because the network was taking heat from some of its right-wing rivals over her absence. And he got that done. And the result was she hosted crazy conspiracy theorists who pushed false claims about Dominion and Smartmatic. And, that's been quite expensive for Lachlan, I guess. But, he has $1.1 billion for each of his siblings. So apparently he's doing fine.
And of course, this is all this, sleazy stuff that's going on over at these fake news outlets, obviously fake news outlets like Fox News, who are willing to look at something, say this was not actually stolen. Let's go out and report that it's stolen. We've seen that, of course, at Fox and Newsmax and so forth for years. But now over legitimate news outlets are starting to be affected by all of this in what may be the most disturbing point, I think, in our conversation today, Matt. The multimedia company named Skydance, as some listeners will know, recently received approval from Trump's FCC for a multi-billion-dollar purchase of Paramount, the owners of CBS and CBS News. That approval came only after the companies agreed to certain Trump administration-friendly terms, including a $16 million settlement of Trump's ridiculous lawsuit against 60 Minutes for an interview with Kamala Harris before last year's election that Trump didn't like. Well, on Monday, Skydance revealed yet another element of the FCC approval that they received for the mega merger when they announced that the company has selected a guy by the name of Kenneth R. Weinstein, who you describe, Matt, in a piece today at Media Matters, as a Donald Trump supporter and right-wing think tanker with no apparent newsroom experience, who often criticizes the news media's purported liberal bias. to he will now scrutinize the network's coverage as its ombudsman, which seems ominous for both the once great CBS News and, frankly, for the American people who have long relied on it. What does all this mean as you see it and write about it today, Matt?
Yeah, I think this is all extremely straightforward and quite concerning. CBS News has instituted an ombudsman because its parent company was trying to assure the FCC that if he approved their merger, the network's coverage would change in a way that he liked. That was something that Brendan Carr, the FCC commissioner, made very clear in his statement approving the merger. Donald Trump has touted the new owner of CBS, David Ellison, as a great man who would do the right thing with the network. And so when Paramount picked someone to fill this role, they didn't pick a journalist with a reputation for integrity and neutrality. They picked a right-wing think tanker and Republican donor who has no newsroom experience, who will give Donald Trump what he wants, which is a CBS News that moves its political coverage to the right. I think Donald Trump is not subtle about what he wants and expects from news outlets. No. He wants fawning coverage like he gets on Fox News, and even Fox News's coverage, he sometimes says, isn't friendly enough. And, you know, I think what we're seeing is how that plays out on an institutional level. You've got the son of a Trumpy oligarch who's purchased the network, who would like to remain in the president's good graces. And so he's remaking the institution to be less of a thorn in the president's side. He's bringing in some right-wing leaders. He's eliminating newsroom independence. And the result will be a news outlet that, will be friendlier to Trump's interests and less willing to criticize his actions.
And, you know, to be clear, the idea of an independent ombudsman who fields complaints about news coverage and so forth, I think that's a great idea. I think every news outlet, you know, that could afford to have one should have one. But this guy seems anything but independent. It also seems like Weinstein seems like he knows nothing about news whatsoever. He has not been involved in news coverage in any way. This seems like, for years, right-wingers have attempted to work the refs at the major news outlets, calling them out on social media for what they perceive to be, you know, liberal bias, etc., which in my opinion is usually ridiculous, but this seems a step beyond this. I mean, they have got a man on the inside now reporting straight up to corporate leadership of the company, what he likes and what he doesn't. And, oh, he happens to be a big friend and donor to the president of the United States.
I think that's entirely right. And looking forward, you can see how this is going to play out in some pretty concerning ways. I mean, you know, there is a massive right-wing infrastructure that spends a lot of time trying to destroy mainstream media outlets, claiming that they are biased, attacking their reporters, finding things that they can point to, like the editing of a Kamala Harris interview purportedly concealing her quote-unquote word salad responses. they find things that they can show their audiences and say, look at this, they're all liars, you can't trust anything that the mainstream press says. And that's helpful to Donald Trump because he doesn't want to have his supporters coming into contact with facts that are unfavorable to him. Mm-hmm. And so now when those kind of flurries happen, there's going to be a new step. Now all of those critics are going to be able to run to the CBS News ombudsman and say, you've got to do something about this. And either he's going to do something about this, or they're going to start attacking CBS. They're going to start attacking him and saying that the network isn't obeying the sort of deal that they agreed to with the FCC. You know, it's just, it's a new mechanism that they can use to discipline reporters who dared to ask tough questions of Donald Trump's administration.
Yeah, and this guy apparently reports straight to the corporate leaders. So if he sees something he doesn't like at CBS News, he just goes to the owners of Paramount, I guess, and complains. And then, you know, as you suggest, if they don't like the job that he's doing, if the Trump administration and the FCC that he now controls don't like it, well, I seems to me they'll bring further pressure on the company to do his bidding, no matter what happens at Skydance, Paramount, CBS. I think once you fold to these guys, that just makes them want to ask for more. I mean, lastly, Matt Gaetz, this really is, it seems to me, the nightmare that folks like myself and all of you folks over at Media Matters for America for so many years have been warning about, that this isn't just now, you know, just right-wing so-called news outlets spreading disinformation or even spreading their influence to the legitimate non-right-wing corporate outlets. This is about the right now actually taking control of those otherwise legitimate outlets, no?
That's right. And it's not only that they're taking control, it's that they're leveraging the power of the executive branch through Trump appointees who are willing to corruptly do the president's bidding in order to force those companies to do so. They're changing the incentives for media outlets so that they need to kneel to the Republican Party's diktats if they want their mergers completed or if they want to avoid, you know, criminal investigations even. It's certainly a step towards authoritarianism, toward the treatment that Viktor Orban of Hungary enforces on media outlets in his country. Yep. And Orban, of course, is someone that Trump has said is a model for what he's trying to do.
Well, boy, the work that you are doing at Media Matters, Matt, and your piece over at MSNBC, which I will link to regarding the Smartmatic lawsuit with Fox News, continues to be so important. I hope that you and Media Matters are able to continue that critical work for years to come, because we need you now more than ever. As I said, I'll link over to your piece at MSNBC, as well as your piece on CBS Today at MediaMatters.org. You can follow Matt on the Blue Skies at Matt Gaetz. Do not confuse that with Matt Gaetz, though it's funny when you do. He is Matt Gaetz, senior fellow at Media Matters for many, many years now, and a longtime friend of this program. Matt, great speaking with you, my friend. Looking forward to doing
Thanks
it again
so
in the
much.
Future. Thank you, sir. Okie dokie. Why worry, eh, Des?
Well, you know, now that CBS has this new right-wing ombudsman, I hope that that guy does not realize that CBS on YouTube has a really great climate channel. They cover climate a lot.
What are you doing?
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, so I don't know. They don't have any. I don't pay attention to CBS on YouTube. Nobody watches it over there. Why worry? Holy cow. All right, quick break, and we are back with, reasons to worry from my old home state of Missouri and Desi Doyen's latest Green News Report. That's all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've gone about as far as they can go.
Well, no. I think they can go further, actually.
About as high as a building ought to grow.
And that's what they're trying to do. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The Missouri State House on Tuesday approved a new congressional map that would likely give Republicans yet another U.S. House seat, answering Donald Trump's call to help protect their party's fragile and razor-thin majority in next year's midterm elections, as the Washington Post reported late on Tuesday. The new map would shatter the Kansas City-based district held by Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, a Democrat, to likely give Republicans a 7-to-1 grip on the state's congressional delegation. Mind you, this is a state that, though it is red, it went to Republicans 58-41 last year for Donald Trump, and yet the Republicans would have a 7-to-1 hold on the U.S. House delegation from the state. The vote in Missouri comes weeks after Texas Republicans adopted a new map that is expected to deliver the GOP up to 5 more House seats next year. And after California Democrats in the legislature voted in response to put a measure onto the ballot this November for voters, a statewide vote that, if successful, would temporarily set aside the state's independent redistricting commission maps to allow Democrats to, yes, gerrymander in response to the state of Texas by adding 5 more Democratic districts in the 2026 midterms that Trump is clearly terrified about losing his House majority during. The Missouri House approved the map and sent it to the state Senate, which is expected to sign off on it this month. From there, it would go to Governor Mike Kehoe, a Republican who has urged lawmakers to adopt what he has dubbed a Missouri First map, which is actually a Trump Republicans first map that ignores the interest of about, 41% of the state's voters. But sure, it's Missouri First. The push for a new map in Missouri is part of an unprecedented national battle spurred by Trump to carve up congressional districts just 5 years after the last census in the middle of the decade. Ordinarily, of course, states draw their districts just once a decade to ensure they have equal populations as determined by the most recent census. But of course, nothing is ordinary anymore now that we have a fascist authoritarian dictator running the White House who is scared to death of losing next year, of losing his House majority, and as well he should be, because his policies from top to bottom are actually hated by the majority of Americans. So instead of changing those policies, instead of doing what the voters might like, just screw the voters over by changing the maps. That's the plan.
It's worked for them before.
It has, and well, we'll see if it works this time. I don't know if it will, but we'll see. Missouri State Rep. Dirk Deaton, the Republican sponsoring the legislation, pitched the redrawn map as a way to keep more communities together within districts. Never mind that it will crack Democratic-leaning Kansas City and its black voters from having a representative of the voters choosing. Instead, the city will be cracked up with Democratic voters added into existing deep rural red rural districts, etc., so that the voters in Kansas City cannot choose a representative of their choosing. Quote, this meets every constitutional legal requirement, including comporting with the Voting Rights Act, Deaton said during the hearing. We will see about that, though the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court happens to be on the verge of killing the last vestige of the landmark Voting Rights Act that previously would have prevented something like this from happening at all. He said it does not take away anybody's ability to vote. No, it just takes away their ability to vote for someone that they would actually like to have represent them in Congress. But sure, you can vote. Even in Putin's Russia, you can vote if you want.
You just can't oust anybody from office.
You just can't choose someone you might like because he's killed or imprisoned everybody who voters might actually want to vote for. We're not there yet. Yet. State Rep. Mark Sharp, the top Democrat on the committee, disputed Deaton's characterizations of the proposal, noting that this would break up Kansas City and could push Cleaver into an early retirement. Democracy is taking a devastating blow, Sharp said, one that it might never recover from. My city, Kansas City, he said, hangs in the balance right here, right now. I can't tell you how angry I am, he said. I feel your anger, Congressman Sharp, Representative Sharp. The GOP-dominated state house approved the map, however, by a wide margin, 90-65, but 13 Republicans joined the Democrats in opposing the measure, including State House Speaker Jonathan Patterson. Patterson did not immediately respond to a request for comment from the Washington Post, but told the Kansas City Star that he opposed splitting up the Kansas City area, which is both interesting and convenient, given that Republicans have enough votes to make this happen anyway. So why not allow those 13 Republicans to pretend that they oppose this move? They're against this. They don't want to break up Kansas City. You know, don't take it out on them next year. Am I being too cynical? Or not cynical enough? The NAACP last week sued to prevent lawmakers from acting, arguing that Kehoe does not have the power to bring lawmakers into session, Governor Kehoe, to bring them into session at all to consider a new map. Other lawsuits could be on their way as well. I hope so. Quote, if Republicans continue down this path, they will face not only angry Democrats, not only an angry electorate, but yeah, angry Democrats as well. Hopefully some angry Republicans who realize what the hell is going on here. But they will face not only an angry electorate, but they will see even more litigation, according to Marina Jenkins, executive director of the National Democratic Redistricting Committee. Democrats are planning to hold a rally on Wednesday at the state capitol in Jefferson City in opposition to the new map. Speakers include Democratic lawmakers from Ohio, which, yes, is another state where Republicans plan to redraw a more favorable Republican congressional map very soon. They may pick up two new Republican seats in that redrawn map. Alongside the map, Republicans in the Missouri State House also, and this probably won't get as much coverage, but it should, they also passed a measure that would make it harder to pass citizen-led ballot initiatives. Under the plan that is now headed to the state Senate, ballot initiatives to amend the state constitution would have to be approved by a majority of voters in each of the state's 8 congressional districts. That instead of just a majority of voters statewide, which means measures like the one that was adopted by Missouri voters last year, I believe, to block an abortion ban across the entire state. Well, that would have to win in every single district, congressional district in the state, even the most rural right-wing areas, in order to be adopted into the state constitution. But sure, hey, everyone still gets to vote. Republicans are backing the limits on citizen initiatives after voters in recent years have approved measures to provide a right to abortion in the Constitution, to legalize marijuana, to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Sounds terrible, huh? Pretty much all of those things would have been impossible to pass under this new scheme by state Republicans if it is successful. And of course, that is the point. Take away power from the voters, hand it to the lawmakers, make sure those lawmakers can never be removed from their jobs and that voters can never change the Constitution to have a say on any of these things. Obviously, you know, people consider my old home state of Missouri, so it's a Republican, very Republican. Well, it didn't used to be very Republican. It used to be very purple, which is reflected when you have statewide votes like the one to, define a right to abortion or to legalize marijuana or to expand health care. Chris Melody Fields Figueredo, the executive director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center, I believe we've had her on the show not too long ago.
Yep.
Said, quote, when ultimately political parties cannot win with the merits of the issues, they resort to tilting the playing field, changing the rules of the system to entrench their power. And this is exactly what's happening in Missouri, she said. And I would add, happening everywhere else where Republicans control the state and federal legislatures. Now, the upside on those changes to the constitutional initiatives, because this move would change the state constitution itself, well, voters will still have to sign off on how initiatives are approved on the ballot. Approval would require the current threshold of a simple majority of statewide votes, not those of each congressional district, as Republicans hope. So, it will come back to voters here first, and hopefully voters will see what these Republicans are up to, and a statewide vote will put the kibosh on this terrible, undemocratic scheme, at least as regards constitutional amendments in the Show Me State. So there is still a chance that Missouri voters can save themselves from the authoritarianism being imposed on them by Republicans in the state legislature, but we will see. All right,
yep.
Let's get to it, Desi Doyen. Our latest Green News Report.
Folks can't wait to get electrons on the grid. They need power right now.
Electricity demand is soaring around the country, and so are prices. Climate change supercharged Europe's worst wildfire season on record. Plus, Trump administration moves to revoke the iconic roadless rule.
All of those rules of the road and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
More shrimp are being recalled because of radioactive contamination.
Authorities are specifically warning of possible contamination with cesium-137. But just to be safe, Red Lobster has replaced their normal seafood bib with a lead dental vest.
Better safe than sorry. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, this is kind of weird. I think nobody actually knows how it happened, at least not yet. But the shrimp are radioactive now.
Yes, it is a very weird story. The Food and Drug Administration has expanded its recall of potentially radioactive shrimp, which was detected in shipping containers at 4 ports in the United States and distributed by major retailers in 18 states. Officials still don't know for sure why, but they suspect that the shrimp may have been processed or stored near radioactive scrap metal at an industrial site in Indonesia. The FDA says the risk is low and the recalled shrimp did not exceed federal radiation exposure limits. But, of course, that's a reminder that nuclear waste never really goes away.
Why worry? Too delicious.
As Europe grapples with its most destructive wildfire season ever recorded, a new study concludes that man-made climate change, driven by the burning of fossil fuels, made weeks of extreme hot, dry, and windy weather that fueled the deadly wildfires in Spain and Portugal 40 times more likely and made the fires 30% more intense than in pre-industrial climate conditions. Here in the U.S., 1 in 4 homes faces climate risks rated as severe or extreme, according to a new study by climate risk modelers First Street.
So, if you have a house, look to your right, look to your neighbor to your left, look across the street. One of the four of you is going to be in big trouble.
Well, something like that.
Okay.
Now, while all properties generally face some degree of extreme weather risk, the analysis calculated that 26% of U.S. homes are in the severe or extreme categories of risk, from wind damage, wildfires, and flooding, with flood risk particularly underestimated by the federal government. The researchers warned that mounting climate threats are reshaping housing markets, putting increasing financial burdens on homeowners and driving up the cost of insurance nationwide. In energy, the Trump administration's abrupt cancellation of a nearly complete offshore wind project off the coast of Rhode Island is now headed to court. The offshore wind developer behind the project and the attorneys general of Rhode Island and Connecticut are separately suing the Trump administration to reverse that work stoppage, calling it, quote, capricious and arbitrary.
Because because it is.
In related news, electricity bills around the U.S. are rising fast.
Go figure.
A recent Consumer Price Index report found electricity prices have risen between 6 and 10% over the last year, on average rising at double the rate of inflation.
And yet we're shutting down new wind energy projects.
Exactly. Americans are paying more for electricity due to extreme temperatures, the proliferation of energy-hungry data centers, and soaring prices for natural gas.
And also because Donald Trump is an idiot.
Jim Ketchum, CEO of NextEra, one of the largest U.S. utility companies, told CNBC recently that because of a years-long manufacturing backlog for natural gas turbines, it will take at least 7 years to get new natural gas-fired power plants online. So renewable energy sources like wind and solar are necessary to meet growing demand.
Nah.
It makes it more cost-effective against gas, but more importantly, it's really the only generation that's available right now to meet the power demand that's here today. Folks can't wait to get electrons on the grid. They need power right now.
And finally, the Trump administration has proposed rescinding the wildly popular roadless rule that protects America's last remaining pristine wilderness areas for future generations. And it is intentionally giving the public almost no time to weigh in. Repealing the roadless rule would lift restrictions on logging, mining, oil and gas extraction on millions of acres of the public's lands. But you have only until September 19th to register a comment at regulations.gov. We have the details at our site, greennews.bradblog.com.
I wish us all luck. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Come on in, ease on down, ease on down the road.
Well, we got to ease on down the road ourselves here. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to my guest today, Matt Gertz of Media Matters for America. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download all of them anytime for free at bradblog.com. We have no paywall. Everyone can go there, read, and listen to everything they want anytime they want. Thanks to those of you who hit a donate button when you do stop by bradblog.com. We could really use your support to stay on the public airwaves during this critical moment in American and world history. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at the Brad Blog. Please follow and share us there. Until we see you next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
And that might be alone. Come on, ease on down, ease on down, down the road.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.